I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning and welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, here 9 to 11 o'clock each weekday, giving you a safe space for independent thinkers out there, people who want to think. Today is a show about people who want to think, want to regurgitate political talking points, want to just be reinforced in what you already believe. But that show may not be for you. This is for people who are able to take in facts and put them in their brain and figure things out. It's Friday today, so every Friday I do a segment called False Flag Friday where I talk about the ways that throughout history, not only in the United States but around the world, focusing on the United States, that we've lied into endless wars. And today is certainly no exception. Matter of fact, it is the combination of September 11th observances today, the 19th anniversary of September 11th, that is merged with, I guess this would only happen every 6 or 7 years. Not sure how leap year affects that thing, but it falls on a Friday with my segment. So we're going to look next hour at just exploring 9/11 through media accounts of it, through things that most people have never even heard. We'll go through exactly what the official story is, what everybody's told we're observing today, what exactly happened. There's something that's just the official story. We'll see if it makes sense to you. I think a lot of people have seen what's going on around COVID and other things, Russia hoax, where you just see how willing politicians are to flat out lie to you and how the media will carry and perpetuate those lies unquestioningly. And hopefully that begins to bleed out into other things to realize that they lie about some pretty big things. These are not mistakes. These are lies. And we're going to take a look at some of them next hour. I've got my quote of today for today by the philosopher Adam Carolla, the comedian. Didn't he get his start on The Man Show, that true bastion of cultural success? Adam Carolla has a tweet he put out, says, "Where are the comedians? I thought they were the ones who pushed back against the man, or are they cowards scared of the mob? Richard Pryor and George Carlin are rolling in their graves." Amen, Adam Carolla. I have said that what we have seen, particularly during the Trump administration, has really been very sad to me, which has been basically the death of humor on the left. A lot of liberals and actors, actresses, and comedians, and funny people on the left, got a good sense of humor. They've lost it, absolutely lost it, and they refuse to go against the mob. Comedians are supposed to be the ones that kind of point out to us the absurdity of the situation we're in, yet most of them now stay silent, and they virtue signal instead. Yesterday, I saw just a little bit. I didn't watch a minute of it, but I saw the NFL opener, and they talked about what took place particularly before the game, a true shining example of the absurdity of the United States today, starting out with the sparse fans and all of the hurdles that everybody had to go through to sit socially distanced. And I wasn't totally paying attention, but they blocked out like the first 12 rows of seats to separate the fans from the players by like 60 feet, something asinine like that. And then there was, of course, the virtue signaling by a bunch of millionaires, particularly a lot of black millionaires who tell us that the country is entirely racist. And this was the kickoff of the bread and circuses sport that were given to keep us all nice and docile. It's worked for decades and decades, but they may be pushing this one too far. The consternation about the event, as I saw this morning, was that people booed. Oh, there were tweets flying. Oh, what do you mean to tell me? People are against unity now. I saw several of the talking heads so disappointed in this crowd because some people booed when they did their when they all grabbed arms. These talking heads, particularly in the sports reporters, oh, it's so disappointing to see people that are against unity. No dummies. People are booing that social justice shaming. What is going on right now with the Black Lives Matter movement has nothing to do with unity. People actually do want unity. Most people, except for some whack jobs on either end of the spectrum, just want to get along and move about their business. And that's what the vast majority of us have been doing now for most of our lives, particularly since the 1970s. Black Lives Matter is not satisfied with calling attention to levels of police misconduct or some instances of actual racism when it does rear its ugly head. They're not satisfied with that. They decided to take it to the every single white person in this country is racist. And if you say you're not a racist, that just proves you're a racist. People are booing the division of Black Lives Matter, the division of people like LeBron James and other sports stars who come out and just constantly point out that every white person in this country needs to be shamed and guilted and dethroned. And it is amazing to me. I mean, I guess these people don't see that. They get so, or maybe they're just because their paychecks depend on carrying water for this social justice movement that has swallowed up professional sports. Maybe, who was it that said, nobody will ever understand anything if their paycheck depends on not understanding it. But the whole movement is all about division. It has absolutely nothing to do with unity. You get a real unity movement going, you might actually find it. Is it unity to have two national anthems now? I guess that's what we're doing. So anyway, that went over like a lead balloon for a lot of people. And it's going to be very, very interesting to see as the NFL season continues on whether or not people will continue to participate in this. I've been predicting the death of the NFL for the last 15 years, essentially, particularly since a financial crisis. I thought, who in the world are they ever going to get people to get sit in the stands for $300 tickets where it costs $1,500 or $2,000 to take your family to a single football game for 4 hours? Is there any way they could survive? These were the words coming out of my mouth back in 2008. And boy, have I been stunned as the league, people have continued to shell out money for this stuff, or maybe the TV, right? I don't know what's been prompting it, but I always am prematurely declaring the death of professional sports that have gotten so exorbitantly expensive. I was talking to a friend the other day. I guess they've built a $5 billion, was this the new LA, Los Angeles facility for the San Diego Chargers, which I guess are the LA Chargers. I had to even ask. I don't even care. I don't even know. I don't know what team is where. But I did see something that said that they built a $5 billion stadium. And this is about the third or fourth stadium that they have in Los Angeles, but all the rest of them were just falling apart. Can't have that. Got to build the new digs. I have not understood the financial model and the reason that the American people have put up with this garbage, have paid this amount of money for $200 for a jersey. I have not understood any of it. If I was 18, maybe. I was a big Oakland Raiders fan when I was a child, big L.A. Lakers fan. But I got to tell you, as soon as life came along, kids came along, jobs came along, all that stuff seemed really unimportant. But for a lot of people, I guess it is worthy of spending thousands and thousands of dollars on. So we'll see. We'll see what the fate of the NFL is. If they keep this up, I predict they are going to have some serious problems going forward. Got a little bit of good news, and then we're going to get into, I can't help doing these clips. I can't help it. We've got COVID stuff, and there are these clips coming out and problems with the testing that show you exactly what we're in. It's like I can't leave these things unsaid or unheard because I feel like maybe we can deprogram some people who believe. I just got done talking to a store clerk who really thinks that COVID-19 is tearing through the high schools and these children are being so irresponsible for getting together. And now 50 players, all of this stuff, they're really scared. And how dare these children be kids? and socialize at this particular time. And, you know, it just feels like it. Maybe at some point people will hear a study, hear a scientist say, look, this is crazy what we're doing right now. And so I've got clips on why the tests are showing what they're showing, examples of what is happening that is perpetuating these high case numbers. This is not a threat. This is not a thing. This is not a thing. I can't resist playing clips that actually bolster that point. Anyway, we'll get to that stuff and more. And then next hour, we're going to explore 9/11. What I talk about next hour, most people have heard nothing about it. Absolutely nothing. So it'll be interesting to see if it is something that is also of interest to you. So stick around for that. I'll be right back.
If you need an experienced lawyer that you can trust, contact the law firm of Danks, Miller & Corey. Our lawyers represent clients and small businesses across Mississippi. With over 100 years of combined legal experience, we have the expertise to handle even the most complex legal matters. When you need a lawyer to fight for you, don't compromise. Call Danks, Miller & Corey. You can reach us at 601-957-3101, 601-957-3101, or online at DanksMillerCorey.com.
Days ago, Donald Trump made a lot of headlines and got a lot of praise for saying something along the lines of, I guess this was in the wake of the anonymous sources saying he had called people that lost their lives in the line of duty losers or suckers for going to Vietnam, all this stuff he was supposedly said. And he said, well, you know, the brass at the Pentagon doesn't like me. The soldiers love me, but the brass at the Pentagon doesn't like me because they want endless wars. Now, he's right about that, but it was interesting because he is right about that. But he's given them more money than any commander-in-chief. When you want to talk about the defense contractors making money, they've never made as much money as they have made during the Trump administration, so I'm not really sure exactly how those two things jive together. Now, we have not invaded any new countries. Donald Trump is, I think the statistic is pretty stunning. It's something like 39 years since a president has not initiated new ground troops or new hostilities with another country. Now, I don't know, assassinating an Iranian general is not exactly a peacetime move, but it is true that we've not entered any new countries. And I didn't really stop and do the research, but if that's true for the last 39 years, that's really sick. I mean, America's foreign policy is just sick. But to pretend that the people at the top of the Pentagon and the defense contractors somehow don't like Donald Trump, I can't imagine that that is actually the case. They have gotten more money than ever. We've dropped more bombs in the Middle East, while not starting any new wars, but when it comes to the sheer number of just of bombs that have been dropped, which are expensive tools, Donald Trump is eclipsing even Barack Obama, who eclipsed George Bush on the number of bombs being dropped in the Middle East. The money is being made for the defense contractors, and I can't imagine that the Pentagon officials are really too upset with that. I mean, they may want to kick off another war, be ready to get that going, because wars are good business. But, I mean, if you can make the money without even having to really start another war, it seems like that's even better. Then I run across this story. This was on Zero Hedge today. I think it's one of their original pieces. This is surely the last thing the American people want to hear, but it does confirm President Trump's recent statement saying that top Pentagon brass essentially seeks out constant wars to keep defense contractors happy. The Department of Defense plans to cut major military contractors a $10 to $20 billion COVID bailout check. Defense One reports, quote, with lawmakers and the White House unable to come to an agreement on a new coronavirus stimulus package, it's unlikely that money requested to reimburse defense contractors for pandemic-related expenses will reach these companies until at least the second quarter of 2021, according to the Pentagon's top weapons buyer.
Defense Undersecretary for Acquisition and Sustainment Ellen Lord in recent statements has indicated the private defense firm's stimulus would cover the period from March 15th to September 15th and is estimated at between $10 and $20 billion. Understand, these are defense contractors. Our current defense budget right now is somewhere around $738 billion per year. But we need to bail them out for another $10 or $20 billion of taxpayer money. They need to be bailed out. And to explain to me exactly how coronavirus has affected the defense contractors, because I don't quite see that. But anyway, it's continuing to go. So kudos to Donald Trump for not starting another war, I guess. If he gets a second term, I am very suspicious that he will not maintain that record, but I hope I'm pleasantly wrong. But good Lord, the money has been flowing to the defense contractors like never, ever before. It was bad under Obama. It was bad under George W. Bush, and it has gotten worse under Donald Trump. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that next hour. Was one good piece of news that I saw here. This whole show, let's be honest, is really about kind of trying to shake the faith in the systems that we have allowed to overtake this country, whether it's deep state, whatever you want to call it, the defense industry, the military industrial complex, the corruption in Washington, D.C. I don't care what it is. This is what this show is really almost all about, is kind of railing against it and trying to shake the foundations of that, try to shake people's faith that one party or the other, if you just get a few more Democrats in there, it'll be a good government. If you just get a few more Republicans in there, if they could just take the House back, it'll be great for the United States. And that's just simply not ever the answer. 73% of Americans say that elected officials do not face serious consequences for misconduct, according to a new Pew Research Center poll. Gee, you think? I mean, this is good, though. I mean, 73%, that's moving on up. People are finally waking. I don't know who you 27% are who believe that politicians are held accountable for their misdeeds. A closer look reveals that a mere 21% of those leaning Democrat and 32% of Republicans believe there is some basic justice for delinquent politicians. Seriously, Republicans, you believe that there's less corruption in political circles than the Democrats do? The Democrats are ahead of Republicans on that one. 32% of Republicans believe that there is justice for bad politicians. That was actually kind of stunning to me. You would almost think that that'd be flip-flopped a little bit. This is not the only issue where U.S. liberals and conservatives almost reached a consensus. 70% of U.S. citizens don't think the government is open and transparent. Gee, you think? While 60% of both Republicans and Democrats believe that judges aren't free from influence of parties or politicians, certainly is the case. Now, what's funny is this story on, you know, essentially the corruption here and that people are starting to catch on to it was actually on RT. They're the ones that ran the story, but it was a Pew Research Center poll. The piece that highlighted this, there's a guy named Mark Salvo, and he wrote in this piece too. I wanted to add to it, so he's reporting on this Pew Research poll. He says, however, Americans still think reform is the answer. It is not. Not allowing others to have power over you is the answer. That means once the system fails, and it will, we replace it with nothing. No more masters and no more slaves. He goes on to say it's time to figure out. In fact, it's past time. We all need to stand up, unite, and stop allowing other people to steal from us, dictate to us, start wars, and use order followers to enforce the, air quotes here in the studio, the laws. We don't need them. They need us. Once we withdraw our consent to be governed, which means controlled, it's over. We're not their property or their slaves. We all need to realize this and realize this quickly. I could not agree more for all of us out here who are just considered basically cattle, sheep to be shorn for taxes and votes, and while the ruling class escapes all accountability for darn near much of anything. And again, he says, however, Americans don't think reform is the answer. It's not.
voting for one party. Getting control of Congress is not going to change anything. Voting for Donald Trump is not going to end up changing anything. I know that. Whoop, I said it. I said it out loud. It's not going to be popular with some people. But I think the last 4 years have shown nothing substantial is changing. Maybe behind the scenes. I'm told it's behind the scenes. Just wait. It's going to happen any day now. I got to tell you, I've run out of patience. I ran out of patience probably the day Donald Trump took office and he told us that we need to leave Hillary Clinton alone, that they're very fine people. They've been through enough. The day that happened, I kind of realized, oh, well. I knew Trump was a Hail Mary anyway, but not much going to change. All right, well, I won't dwell on that today. I know how unpopular that is. I hate to bust bubbles here. It's just that we deal with facts on the show, or at least the reality of the situation as it exists now. There were just a ton of headlines yesterday on coronavirus. And here's the crazy thing. As we see the numbers go down, a lot of us start to think, ah, thank goodness, finally. No. Not so fast. Did you hear Fauci's comments yesterday? Fauci warns USA needs to, quote, hunker down, unquote, for fall and winter. He says it's not going to be easy. They are not done with this, not by a long shot. As the weather changes, I'm so ready to see fall. The heat is just bothers me more and more the older I get. I'm so ready to see fall, but at the same time, the flu season is going to be upon us. Anthony Fauci is teeing this one up for another 5 to 6 months of this ridiculousness. So we're going to play some clips just exposing how wrong they are at the upper levels. Stay with me. I'll be right back. Mike Madison here. Have you heard about Lee Garland's latest offer? You know, he's the real estate agent with the Moving On team at RE/MAX Alliance who will guarantee the sale of your home. Well, he's up the ante once again, and not only will he guarantee the sale, but he wants the opportunity to offer you cash before you ever even place it on the market. That's right. Lee Garland with the Moving On team at RE/MAX Alliance is and represents cash buyers who are willing to buy your home as is today. Can you imagine not having to jump through a bunch of hoops, not having to scramble around to meet the buyer's needs, and not having to do repairs for some crazy home inspection? If so, call Lee Garland at 601-983-1130 or 601-941-2424 for more details on his cash offer and or guaranteed sale. Again, call Lee Garland at 601-983-1130, 601-983-1130 or 601-941-2424.
I need your arms around me. I need to feel your touch. I need your understanding. I need your love so much. You tell me that you love me so.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Today is the 19th anniversary of 9/11, and we're going to explore that more next hour. I got to tell you, it's a tough day for me every single year, and if you've listened to this show with any regularity since I've been on the air, you know every September 11th I do a show about this. It's tough because it was a terrible day. Everybody remembers where they were on September 11th, and it was a scary time. I remember people going to get gas. I mean, we didn't know what was going on, but what has been equally horrific to that day is the way that it has been used. The fact that so many of the truths of what took place on September 11th are never discussed, and they're pretty important. A lot of people don't want to hear it, which is odd to me. You know, if you came to me and told me that my child was some kind of a criminal mastermind, if I felt like something was a little off, you know, maybe my kids, I've got twins, maybe they had a lot of extra money. I didn't really know where it came from, but I just kind of ignored it and didn't really do anything. If somebody sat me down and said, look, there's some problems here, kind of concerned, this seems, you know, I would listen to that, even though it's my children. As much as I love my children, if something funky was going on with them, I would want to know. When it comes to 9/11, there's a lot of people who will stick their fingers in their ears. I don't want to hear it. It's too much to handle. And so next hour may not be for you if you want to participate in what has become this rally around the flag day without actually holding the people accountable for 9/11 accountable. I mean, I guess that's one way to do it. That's what the vast majority of the country appears willing to do. But it is interesting to see as we kind of expose whether it's COVID or Epstein, the Russia hoax. Like, more and more people are coming to the realization that we are not being given the truth about much of anything. We know the news media is wildly dishonest and will carry some narrative like they did with Russia for 3 years. Hell, 3 years, 4 years, they're still doing it. So to watch these news stories, up to and including last night on the news where they were interviewing people about the suspicions of Russian interference in our elections and their influence, it is stunning to me to live in a country that has literally, and I take great, that word is so overused, but the United States has literally invaded countries, toppled their governments, and killed their leaders, but we act like some hackers in Chechnya monkeying around on Facebook is some kind of an international incident, and we are just these helpless victims. Oh, we're under attack. The Russians are trying to influence our elections. We don't influence elections. We'll go into your country, and we will just outright destroy it. But that's okay for some reason. The Russians get on Facebook. That is a not. I mean, we have had people over the last 3 years, particularly on the Democratic side, who cannot accept the loss of one of the most corrupt politicians in the history of the United States, Hillary Clinton. They have described the Russian Facebook ads and Google ads of 2016 as a 9/11 style event. We went into Libya, turned it into a failed state, created a civil war there that had the leader drug out into the streets and sodomized to death. But then we act like we are just so, but the Russians are influencing our elections. The United States is knee-deep in every election that matters around the world. So are the Chinese. So are the Russians. I would imagine the Peruvians get involved in Colombian elections and Brazilian elections and Ecuador elections, Paraguay, Uruguay. Every government is trying to influence one of the. Every country has their own ideas of who they want to lead another country, and they will do everything from benign to malevolent stuff to try to manipulate an election. Russia included in that. But the Americans, a country that will literally invade your country and occupy it for 2 decades to impose their will, is somehow a shrinking little victim when it comes to somebody influencing domestic politics. I mean, how we get away with that is absolutely stunning to me. I wanted to play these clips, though. Let me get into this COVID. Here's the headlines from yesterday. CDC, people with virus twice as likely to have eaten at a restaurant. Now, I don't know exactly what they're trying to say, but to the poor restaurateurs, all I can say is, I am so sorry you are being abused the way you're being abused. You shouldn't put up with it anymore. You should throw open the doors, tell the politicians and bureaucrats here in Mississippi, that'd be Thomas Dobbs, to go take a flying leap and serve your customers because people want to come eat at your restaurant. I don't know what they are doing to target restaurants like this. I mean, people go to the grocery stores and are in more contact than they are when they're at a restaurant, but it doesn't say that. People with the virus twice as likely to have eaten at a restaurant. Headline yesterday, France records 9,843 new cases, highest daily total since pandemic began. And then Fauci warns USA needs to hunker down for fall, winter. It's not going to be easy. Here is a story about a woman in Quebec. We're going to talk about testing right now, just because these are the little nuggets that have come across my feed in the last couple of days. Here's a woman in Quebec to show you the ridiculousness of testing.
I don't know where else to start other than how frustrating is this?
It's very frustrating. It's very frustrating, but also very stressful.
When she first tested positive for COVID-19, Sarah Laurence Côté thought she'd be fine in a couple of weeks. That first test came back May 6th. But as an orderly at this Montreal seniors residence, to be allowed back to work, she needed 2 negative tests. She hasn't been able to get even 1.
You go back and get tested again and again and again, and every time it comes back positive.
Yeah.
How many times so far?
8 times so far.
Eight
times positive, yeah.
Well, keeping a positive attitude hasn't been easy. Côté's had some ups and downs. In June, doctors told her she wasn't contagious and allowed her to go back to work and school. She's studying nursing at the Cégep. But after another test last week, she was told it had been so long that she was now considered as having been reinfected. That caused some problems when she told the school it sent 50 of her fellow students home.
She's been tested 8 times. Now, I don't know if you listen to her. She's perfectly fine. No hospitalization, no horrible disease. She just keeps testing positive. And when you look at these numbers of the cases, we're always talking about cases now. Oh my gosh, new cases. France, 9,000 new cases. Obviously, there is something horrifically wrong with these tests. And here is, dang it, I didn't write this guy's name. He works for, it's like the Center for Investigative or Evidence-Based Medicine, something along those lines. He's done a test. He'll tell you why these tests are so ridiculously wrong and why they have stoked this hysteria, but they're at the same time basically worthless. Think about that. The testing, the hundreds of millions of people around the planet, most of them here in the United States, with all of this testing, and it's all completely pointless.
When you do a PCR test, you basically amplify the amount of RNA, you put it into a DNA copy, and then you exponentially double that amount of DNA.
Warning, this is kind of science-y, difficult to keep up with, but it does explain in just a second in pretty clear English, you'll understand what he's getting at.
And that's called the cycle threshold. And the more times you do that, the less virus you start out with. And this is important because you can basically pick up a single copy of RNA in an individual. There is a complete difference between you being infectious, which is about 7 days from the onset of symptoms, to about at day 8, you cannot find infectious people, apart from the few people who end up on ITU who are worsening. We have found RNA shedding in evidence for 78 days. Because the RNA is only 20 base pairs long, and it takes much longer for you to degrade the RNA. So when you're picking up asymptomatic people, you have no idea if they have active infection or did they have it 2 months ago, because you intermittently shed this RNA, and it's the same for all viruses. Now, you can put in a threshold level which says you are infectious, which is about 1 million copies per mil in a sample, which is a cycle threshold of about 25. And if you do that, you can pick up the people who are infectious. But the way we're deploying the test at the moment is in a sort of ragbag way that says, whatever amount of RNA you've got on board, you are positive. And we are going to see this move forward. And we've wrote this about 2 or 3 times in the Spectator and kept moving forward the discussion. But it's now on the radar because there are 25 studies that have now looked at this, and 10 have come in the last 3 weeks. So this idea is becoming more important.
So what this is saying is, in plain English, these people who are testing and they're testing positive, and not even to allow for the false positive, but if they're testing positive, these kids at school. You just heard that woman who tested positive 8 times, and so her most recent test that showed her positive, they sent 50 kids home. 50 people that have been around her are now forced to quarantine when she's quite obviously not contagious at all. Contagion lasts only at the most 8 days if you have symptoms. So all these asymptomatic people around here who are testing positive may have had this virus or just been exposed to it months and months ago. They're in no way, shape, or form any threat to transmit a disease to anybody at any time. Yet we are doing contact tracing, shutting down schools for a couple of days, sending kids home, ticketing, fining people for going to parties. This is one of the craziest things I've ever seen. And here is, because my question is, does Thomas Dobbs, the state health guru here in Mississippi, does he not know this? Maybe he doesn't know this. I don't know what scientists do. Are scientists like politicians where, or like people in politics? See, most people in politics now, all the partisans, if you're a diehard Democrat, if you're a diehard Republican, if you're a Trump hater or a Trump lover, you only look at the things that bolster your side of the argument. You know, you refuse to look at anything that might question your current beliefs. Do scientists do this too, where they can run across a research paper and say, oh, that's not what I already believe, so I'm not going to look at that research paper? Because it almost has to be that way. Does Thomas Dobbs really not know the information that's going out on the Mike Madison Show, that's out there on YouTube, that's out there being covered all over the place? Does he ignore that stuff? Does he disregard it? Does he just not care? Does Tate Reeves ever hear anything contrary to what Thomas Dobbs is whispering into his ears? And then at the very top of the heap, how about Anthony Fauci, who is telling us right now, a long, hard slog through the fall and winter is coming. Don't get comfortable. This is going to be terrible. That's just really interesting, because this is Dr. Fauci just a few months ago.
Yeah. To just add one thing that seems to get lost in that question is that, as Bob said, and I agree, we would really like to see the data, because if there is asymptomatic transmission, it impacts certain policies that you do regarding screening, etc. But the one thing historically people need to realize, that even if there is some asymptomatic transmission, in all the history of respiratory-borne viruses of any type, asymptomatic transmission has never been the driver of outbreaks. The driver of outbreaks is always a symptomatic person. Even if there's a rare asymptomatic person that might transmit, an epidemic is not driven by asymptomatic carriers.
This is Anthony Fauci. Yet we are quarantining, contact tracing, closing schools, going through all of these things based on the idea that every single human being walking around is a potential biohazard. And this is Anthony Fauci out of his own mouth just a few months ago saying asymptomatic spread, that just doesn't happen. He says it's almost non-existent there would be any asymptomatic spread. So can someone please explain to me then why we are taking a bunch of asymptomatic people, sending them home, quarantining them, forcing them home, giving them tickets when they go out in public, arresting them, forcing masks on them? Do you know what the cruel irony of this whole COVID mess is? You know what the message should have been? Hey, if you don't feel good, please stay home. Because those people might be contagious. And after 6 months, I got to tell you, we probably got that figured out pretty well now. I haven't seen anybody out in public with watery eyes and a runny nose and hunch. I mean, you've seen people with the flu. You know what it looks like? You know when someone shows up to your office with the flu. We've known this our entire adult lives, right? You look at somebody and you go, Fred, you're not looking so good. You might need to go home. See, that's how that's how this could have been handled. Essentially that way right there. Hey, you don't look so good. Why don't you go home? That's basically the extent of what we should have been doing for the last 6 months. And this is out of Anthony Fauci's own mouth. Yet Thomas Dobbs here in Mississippi is taking a bunch of people who are expressing no symptoms, and to Anthony Fauci just said, if you don't have any symptoms, you're not spreading anything. And we just had the other scientists come on and say they've done these studies and you can show this positive test from months and months ago. You're not contagious in any way. And we are locking down people who are not contagious, who are not a danger to anybody. We have uprooted our entire way of life and forced small businesses into bankruptcy. We've got people committing suicide here. And this stuff is out there. You know what I mean? It's out of Fauci's own mouth. And yet it changes nothing. These studies are done showing that these people, you can test positive for being exposed to it in a small way months and months and months ago. The guy said for 78 days you can be shedding the RNA on this that would show a positive test. But you're not sick. You're not contagious. All of this stuff is right out there, yet we are not changing course. As a matter of fact, I feel like we are about to slide down into another round of lockdowns and everything else as soon as the flu hits. They're prepping us for this. It's absolutely amazing. Like I say, I'm not sure. Again, look, Thomas Dobbs may be the greatest guy in the world to sit down and have a beer with or play in a poker game with or go out water skiing with. He may be just the salt of the earth, wonderful guy. But he has done a tremendous amount of damage based on what is obviously going to come out to be, if we ever know the truth of it, some incredibly, incredibly bad science in the end. I'll be right back. All night
with the king. Food allergies know how difficult it can be to find quality, affordable restaurants that cater to your needs. That's why the folks over at Your Pie have made a commitment to ensure everyone can enjoy great-tasting pizza. Your Pie offers gluten-free dough, vegan, non-dairy cheese, and non-dairy sorbet. Just ask for it next time you're in line. Matter of fact, just mention any allergy you have, and the folks at Your Pie will go over the top to make sure you can safely enjoy their delicious food. That's Your Pie in Gluckstadt, where food allergies never stop you from being able to express your inner pizza.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul, you're on your own.
All right, only a couple minutes left in this hour, and then we're going to come back with False Flag Friday. We're going to take a look at, explore the some of the strangeness surrounding September 11th attacks. Would it surprise anybody to think that the government and the media has lied to you about things that took place or didn't take place on 9/11? Would that be surprising to anybody at this point? I think for more and more people, you know, it took a while before people realized maybe Kennedy wasn't killed by one guy sitting in the book depository. It took a while for that to come around. But we're 19 years in now on the 19th anniversary of September 11th. We're going to take a look at it. When it comes to COVID, I added COVID to my False Flag Friday a couple of weeks ago. Now, I'm not a doctor, as I say every single week during my health segment. But it appears to me that all the evidence is coming in that here's what the advice around COVID, here's what the reaction to COVID should have been. Hey, we got a pretty contagious bug going around. Some people, elderly people, sick people, you really need to be extra careful right now. This thing is nothing nice if you've got certain underlying conditions, particularly obesity. So you need to be really careful. Might consider dropping a few pounds, getting yourself out of the danger zone there. But anyway, the bottom line should have been, hey, if you don't feel good, please stay home. This thing is pretty contagious. It obviously is pretty contagious because a lot of people are testing positive. They were exposed at some point. But they didn't know it. They didn't even know they had this virus. The entire advice should have been, hey, if you don't feel good, stay home. If you're vulnerable to a disease, you need to be extra careful. That's it. Not the destruction of 600,000 small businesses. Have you ever owned a small business? For those of you who have not, it's really hard. You give up a lot. You give up financial rewards for years. You sacrifice time with your families. You risk capital. You put your heart and soul into a business to have it just destroyed by a bunch of bureaucrats and politicians who will never apologize and will never admit they were wrong. That's probably the most frustrating thing to me. If they would at least go, hey, we got this wrong. I really got this wrong. They never will. Nope, they'll get more money. They'll say they needed to do something. Well, they did something. They crushed our country.
Think back to your childhood. I bet you can recall that one person who was always tattling on you. You took an extra cookie from the jar. They told mom. Didn't brush your teeth before bed. They ratted you out. Well, our own bodies are a lot like those childhood tattletales, consistently giving us reports of our health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. This is Friday, and every Friday I do a segment called False Flag Friday. We've covered all kinds of things that have led the United States into war based on lies, Gulf of Tonkin, weapons of mass destruction, the latest supposed gas attacks in Syria that have been shown to have been complete fabrications. We've seen the poisoning of, that supposedly Russia's done of these people that make no sense. I mean, this is just part of history. The Reichstag fire in Germany back in the 1930s was used by Hitler to assume power there. And the Reichstag was actually set by the government and then used as a pretext for these draconian policies. And our lives have changed tremendously since the 9/11 attacks. The only thing that may be comparable to the 9/11 attacks is how our lives are going to change going forward after this ridiculous COVID hysteria. Are we going to have, you know, immunization passports and these kinds of things? We're not sure yet exactly what they will carry forward out of this, but believe me, they do not relinquish power when they've got it over people. They will continue to micromanage our lives based on COVID the way they did after 9/11. 9/11 was a traumatic event for a lot of people, obviously. A lot of people lost their lives that day, but it changed our lives a lot, too. We very, very, very quickly and very willingly gave up privacy here. We allowed our grandparents and our grandchildren to be molested at the airports, getting onto a plane. Everybody thought there was a terrorist behind every tree. We've fought right now probably around $8 trillion worth of wars in the Middle East, displaced. There's a story I saw today. They've estimated it's between 37 and 59 million people have been displaced in the Middle East, have lost their homes. Millions have died. Millions have been wounded. Thousands of our troops have died. Tens of thousands of our troops have been catastrophically injured. I mean, 9/11 kicked off a whole round of bad things. And today we remember it, but we remember the official story, and we're going to talk about that a little bit today. Because if you look deep into the topic, and I'm going to play some things today. I don't know if I did the best job of putting this in an order. I just took bits and pieces of it. I do this show every single year. So if you've listened to it before, you're probably going to hear some of the same things again, but it bears repeating. 9/11 is not what we were told. Now, here's the thing. People say, well, then what was it? Who did it then? I don't know. Really don't. Well, we know some of the players in it. We don't know everything. A lot of people say, well, you know, if you don't know every detail, if you can't tell me exactly what happened, then, you know, you don't know what you're talking about. Well, I certainly can't tell you what happened, but I can tell you there's a lot of things. And there's so many things, too, where really, when you look at any event, you can look at certain things that don't seem to make sense. And, you know, one or two of those things, I guess some coincidences exist in the world. But when you have hundreds of things that just don't seem to make sense, that's the smoke, meaning there's fire somewhere. And I think that's what 9/11 is. I resisted any ideas that 9/11 was anything other than just a ragtag band of radical jihadists hell-bent on the destruction of the United States. I resisted any ideas of that not being true for 5 or 6 years until I just saw enough things and I went, oh, that's kind of weird. And then you see something else and you go, huh, that's weird too. And we're going to get to some of the main weirdness there. It's up to you to do your own thing, but this is just one of these things to understand, I think. If you want to really know how the world works, you want to know why we're in endless wars, you want to know why the defense contractors are making... We spent $1 trillion now on national security here. $1 trillion we don't have. $1 trillion we're laying on around the necks of future generations not yet born in debt. But people are making that money. It's going into somebody's pockets. It's coming out of ours and going into somebody else's. And I think that's important to consider. So you can listen to the show. You can make up your own mind. We're going to spend some time on it. It is my opinion that on November 22nd in 1963, there was a coup in the United States. Now, a lot of people point to this idea that the deep state's trying to take down Donald Trump. Donald Trump the other day said it's the biggest political crime of all times. I say, well, it's definitely not good, but there may have been a day that was a little worse than that, and that's November 22nd of 1963, when a sitting president of the United States was assassinated in front of the world in broad daylight in Dallas, Texas, when they shot and killed John F. Kennedy Jr. Now, I don't know too many people that are left out there who think, well, this was just Lee Harvey Oswald in the book Depository who took a few shots and changed the course of the world. Most people understand there's some level of some funkiness that went on there. Obviously, the Kennedy was shot from the front. Never explained to us. Isn't it odd to you at all that the entire apparatus of the mainstream media and all the investigative reporters on mainstream media and all of the prominent politicians that have come and gone since 1963, and none of them really seem very interested in trying to figure out exactly what happened to the assassination of a very popular president in broad daylight in front of everybody? See, I think that was a coup. And when they figured out that they could get away with literally killing a sitting president right in front of everybody, and they could crush any dissent. Anybody who questioned the story, this is when they rolled out the term conspiracy theorist. Because people thought, well, that doesn't quite make sense. And they looked at even the Zapruder film. They said, well, it looks like he might have gotten shot from the front, the way his head jerked. And, you know, could Lee Harvey Oswald have actually gotten off all of those shots in that period of time? People started questioning it. So the CIA literally invented the term conspiracy theorist to start painting anybody who questioned the official story as some kind of a kook. And that was also effective. It's still effective today. The term conspiracy theorist, it makes you some kind of a tinfoil hat wearing nut. When it's actually, when you start to realize, hey, the government lies to us constantly. The media lies to us constantly, and politicians lie to us constantly. So questioning their account of anything is really the most sane thing you could possibly do. But I believe the coup started then, and that's when they really decided they could pretty much get away with anything, and I believe 9/11 is one of these things. Now, again, I don't know exactly who was behind it. I'll play a lot of clips today. I'll give you some different things to think about, and you can put your own pieces together. And it's a pretty fascinating research topic if you can stomach it. As I said, a lot of people, they just put their fingers in their ears. No, our government's no good, but they would never blank, blank, blank. I mean, yeah, they would crush 600,000 businesses. They would put 50 million people out on their butts for work for COVID, but they would never do this. Oh, sure, they would invade a country, occupy it for 20 years, costing thousands of service members' lives and millions of innocent people killed in the Middle East, but they would never do anything like 9/11. Then you hear of something called Operation Northwoods. And this is one of those things where, to me, it made me go, huh, that's weird. If you're not familiar with Operation Northwoods, this was a plan back in the days of Kennedy when they wanted to kick off war with Cuba. And what they decided was, well, what we could do is, you know, down a civilian airliner, hijack an airliner, stage a hijacking, you know, kill a plane full of people. Now, this was not something that was just discussed in a meeting one day and someone went, oh, get out of here. We're not going to kill a bunch of innocent people just to start a war with Cuba. No, this was a plan signed off on by the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Can't remember the year, 62, 63, somewhere in that area, in the Kennedy era. The Joint Chiefs of Staff, this is the top of the U.S. military, signed off on a plan, decided it was a good idea to kick off a war to stage the death of innocent people on an airliner. And when you hear that, you go, oh, wait, they are psychopaths. They really would sacrifice a bunch of people to get the war that they wanted. Well, they've gotten all the wars they've wanted. We'll even play today the Wesley Clark Seven Countries clip. When we come back, we're going to start with the official story, and then we're going to go through some of the problems with it. And I'm going to play clips. These are words out of the, you know, people's mouths. This is a news coverage of the day. It's a whole lot of stuff that should make people go, what the hell? That doesn't make any sense. And when you start thinking about that, you realize the totality of what we're dealing with. It should change people. It should, I mean, the term is waking up. It should just let you know. This is why this show is not about getting more Republicans in office. That's going to change everything. No, it's not, because a lot of Republicans know that the story that they've told us about 9/11 is complete bunk. Have they told their constituents? No. Have they carried water for this official story? Of course they have, because they want this system kept the way it is. There's not a political solution to this. It needs to just be a recognition by the American people that the system we have is corrupt down to the core. I'll make that case when we come back. Stay with me.
Mike Madison here. All of us should be flying our U.S. flag. And now's the perfect time to contact a Complete Flag Source to have a flagpole installed at your home or business. For a limited time, all U.S. flags up to 5x8 along with flagpole setups are 15% off. That's 15, 20, and 25-foot in-ground kits, sectional, and aluminum. House spinner poles will keep your flag from wrapping in the wind, and a Complete Flag Source has all of the right brackets. Visit a Complete Flag Source, I-55 North Frontage Road, Jackson, or online at CompleteFlags.com.
All right, so here's what Americans are told to remember on 9/11 every single year, this being the 19th year of remembrances, or I guess the 18th year of remembrances and 19 years since the event took place. Here's the official story. Here's what we're told to talk about today. 19 guys, all radical Muslims, came out of the caves of Afghanistan, armed with box cutters only, took over 4 airliners, overpowered the crews, and flew 2 of the planes into New York City, 1 into the Pentagon, and 1 that was taken down by the passengers in Pennsylvania. They did this. This is what we're told to remember on 9/11. They did this because they hate our country for our freedoms. Now, of course, this, even if this was the accurate account of what it was, just 19 ragtag radical jihadists with box cutters that somehow thwarted the greatest military and intelligence operation the Earth had ever seen in 2001. We had more intelligence. We had FISA courts. We had eavesdropping. We had spies. We had a huge military. But somehow these 19 guys with box cutters emerged from the cages and thwarted that entire security apparatus. They tell us they did it because of our freedoms. Even if they had done it, you think it might have something to do with the fact that we had been dropping bombs and laying waste to the Middle East for decades. We had overthrown governments there. 500,000 children died in the 1990s in Iraq alone based on our sanctions. You think that might kind of tick them off? Or do you really think that they were just mad because we let our little girls grow up and have jobs and vote? This is how ridiculous the story is still up to today. 19 guys with box cutters thwarted the greatest security apparatus the world had ever known and attacked us because they don't like the fact that we let our women have jobs and vote. That's essentially what the official story is. So we're going to get into some of the problems with that. One of the things is that there was no intercept. Did anybody find it at all interesting? There was no interception of any of these planes on their way. Some of them up to an hour they were in the air, known to have been hijacked. Some of them already crashed into World Trade Center buildings. And yet there was no intercept. This was an exchange between Lee Hamilton and the 9/11 Commission when he was interviewing Norm Mineta. He was the transportation secretary, and he was in a bunker with Dick Cheney on the day of 9/11. I want you to listen to how Dick Cheney behaved. As he knew, already planes had flown into the World Trade Centers. And during the course of about an hour before a plane hit the Pentagon, this thing was in the air and they were tracking it. Listen to what Dick Cheney said about it prior to it hitting the Pentagon.
I wanted to focus just a moment on the Presidential Emergency Operating Center. You were there for a good part of the day. I think you were there with the Vice President. And we had that order given, I think it was by the President, that authorized the shooting down of commercial aircraft that were suspected to be controlled by terrorists. Were you there when that order was given?
No, I was not. I was made aware of it during the time that the airplane coming in to the Pentagon, there was a young man who would come in and say to the vice president, the plane is 50 miles out. The plane is 30 miles out. And when it got down to the plane is 10 miles out, the young man also said to the vice president, do the orders still stand? And the vice president turned and whipped his neck around and said, of course the orders still stand. Have you heard anything to the contrary? Well, at the time, I didn't know what all that meant. And
the flight you're referring to is
the flight that came into the Pentagon.
Pentagon. Yeah.
So there you go. So they know this thing's flying into the Pentagon. Dick Cheney knows this thing's flying. Maybe they didn't know exactly what the target is. I'll submit that Dick Cheney certainly knew what the target was. But they said, do we need to do anything? Hey, it's 50 miles out. No, don't do anything. It's 30 miles out. Do we need to do anything? No. Mr. Vice President, it's 10 miles out. Do the orders still stand to not do anything? And Dick Cheney says, yeah, don't do anything. And then this plane hits the Pentagon. Now, what's interesting about the plane hitting the Pentagon is that all of the videos from all of the, you know, there's gas stations around the Pentagon. There's all kinds of hotels around the Pentagon, everything like that. All of the videotapes from around the Pentagon showing this plane crashing into the Pentagon, all of the tapes of that stuff were scooped up by the FBI that day. We've never seen any of them. There have been three frames of one camera from a gas station that have been released that show something hitting the Pentagon and causing an explosion. All of that video, all of it confiscated by the FBI that day, we get three frames. The Pentagon, one of the most heavily guarded buildings, one of the most secure buildings on planet Earth, our Pentagon. Yeah, but listen, there's also the, and I'm going to give you some resources at the end of the show if you want to take a look at more of this stuff, but it was pretty fascinating that the terrorists were known to have not been, some of them had taken flight lessons at some of schools, I think particularly in Florida. They had taken Cessna training lessons. The people who taught them these lessons said the guys were really not very good, and they weren't interested in learning how to land, which should have been a red flag, but we just ignored it. They weren't even really good at flying a Cessna, but somehow this plane that hit the Pentagon was able to come in, drop about 8,000 feet, do a 270-degree turn, and go skip right across the ground without actually hitting the ground or missing the building, and flew broadside straight into the side of the Pentagon. This is a guy that couldn't fly a Cessna, but he was able to pull off this maneuver. Osama bin Laden. You know who the bin Laden family was really good friends with? Huh. The Bushes. George W. Bush being our president at the time. This is a story from The Economist magazine. On the day Osama bin Laden's men attacked America, Shafiq bin Laden, described as an estranged brother of the terrorist, was at an investment conference in Washington, D.C., along with two people who were close to President George Bush, his father, the first President Bush, and James Baker, the former Secretary of State who masterminded the legal campaign that secured W's move to the White House. The conference was hosted by the Carlyle Group, a private equity firm that manages billions of dollars, including, at the time, some bin Laden family wealth. In the immediate aftermath of the attacks, when no one was being allowed out of the United States, many members of the bin Laden family in America were spirited home to Saudi Arabia. The revival of defense spending that followed greatly increased the value of the Carlyle Group's investments in defense companies. The Carlyle Group is embroiled with the defense and intelligence establishment. Quote, it is widely regarded as an extension of the U.S. government, or at least the National Security Agency, the CIA, and the Pentagon. That's from The Economist, June 26, 2003. Again, a lot of these things taken in themselves, I mean, you know, maybe it's a coincidence that some of the bin Laden family was here in the United States when this happened. And maybe it's a coincidence that they were all shepherded. They were in several spots around the United States, that they were all allowed to board planes and fly back to Saudi Arabia prior to any kind of questioning or anything like this, even though Osama bin Laden had already been named as the suspect for the mastermind of 9/11. We took the bin Laden family, very close ties to the Bush family, and we allowed them to leave the country when nobody else could move about. Maybe just a coincidence. This was just kind of an interesting true or false thing. I pull from a lot of videos, and trust me, I'm going to miss a ton of stuff. I don't have enough time to get into all these things, but I try to get some nuggets to at least get people to start. If anybody can leave these segments just going, huh, that's weird.
Think of it as a conspiracy theory true or false test. A. When George W. Bush started his first oil company, who helped fund it? Osama bin Laden's brother and brother-in-law. True or false? B. After a terrorist bomb at a barracks in Saudi Arabia killed 19 Americans, who got the multi-million dollar contract to rebuild? The bin Ladens. True or false? C. On the morning of September 11th, 2001, who was in a meeting at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Washington? George Bush Sr. and Osama bin Laden's brother. True or false? Actually, the answer could be D, all of the above. Because believe it or not, as far-fetched as they sound, each and every one of those things, the bin Laden link to the Bush Oil Company, the bin Laden construction contract after the terrorist bomb, and the bin Laden-Bush meeting on 9/11, is true.
What's amazing to me is that with all of our media, I don't think I ever saw a time where George Bush, George W., or H.W. Bush were ever questioned by the media saying, what do you think about the fact you've got such strong ties to the bin Laden family and the son is the one that masterminded these attacks? I don't think I ever saw that. The terrorists, we were told, were these radical Islamic fundamentalists, right? Hate us for our freedom and our way of life and the depravity of the United States, yet they were known to be out drinking and taking drugs and going to strip clubs while in the U.S. Strange way to show your adherence to Allah and very fundamentalism Muslims. Let's see what else. On September 10th, it was interesting, the day before September 11th, and I don't have the clip in front of me here, but on September 10th, the day before September 11th, Donald Rumsfeld, our Secretary of Defense at the time, let out kind of a bombshell that probably should have been pretty big news, where he came out and he said, hey, we just discovered there's $2.3 trillion missing at the Pentagon. $2.3 trillion missing at the Pentagon. Did you ever hear anything else about that again? Nope. Because on September 11th, we were back to something else. The 9/11 Commission, Mike, why are you bothering to do this? They wrote a whole report on it. They had a 9/11 Commission. Now, the 9/11 Commission took forever to get going, and it was pretty much a lot of pressure, particularly by the families of the victims of 9/11, to force a 9/11 Commission. You would think the biggest terrorist attack that the United States had ever known would spur an immediate investigation into every nook and cranny of it. But the Bush administration really resisted a true investigation. But then they were finally forced to do it. Here's how it's explained by a couple of the 9/11 commissioners, people put on this task force. This is Lee Hamilton and what's the other guy's name? Tom Kane, I think it is. Anyway, I'll maybe correct that name. Here's them explaining the 9/11 commission that they were a part of.
So there are all kinds of reasons we thought we were set up to fail.
Set up
we got
to fail.
Started late. We had a very short time frame. Indeed, we had to get it extended. We did not have enough money. They were afraid we were going to hang somebody, that we would point the finger.
Lee and I write in a book that...
This is Tom Keen. He's another one of the 9/11 commissioners.
We think the commission in many ways was set up to fail, because we had not enough money, we didn't have enough time, we'd been appointed by the most partisan people in Washington.
So there you go. That's two of the 9/11 commissioners saying they were set up to fail. Well, a lot of things where they've talked about being stonewalled on stuff, they couldn't get documents, they just, the 9/11 commission, you would think we would move heaven and earth to get to every nook and cranny to discover what was at the bottom of this. Now, what's also interesting about the 9/11 Commission is that they were asking George W. Bush and Dick Cheney to come testify to it. They resisted for a long time. Why would the sitting president of the United States and the vice president of the United States not be eager to sit in front of the 9/11 Commission and testify? Well, they finally did end up testifying, George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, but they did it under two conditions. Number one, they had to appear together. Now, that's just odd. If you think of any other crime, why would two people involved in something, why would they have to be there at the same time? Now, if you are willing to just deal with reality, obviously, to me at least, I guess, I shouldn't say obviously, but to me at least, it's one of those things where, well, we need to make sure we're telling the same story. They would not appear separately. They had to appear together, and then most tellingly, they refused to do it under oath. Why in the world would the president and the vice president not go under oath to testify in front of the 9/11 Commission if this was just the story of 19 ragtag terrorists crawling out of caves with box cutters? What would be the problem with testifying about this under oath? Well, as we keep going through the show today, I'll tell you why. There might have been things that they didn't want to tell the truth about. I'll be right back.
If you're considering renovations, remodels, or roofing, call on Tri-County Restoration. Do you have an insurance claim? We work with all insurance companies. Tri-County offers kitchen and bath remodels, wood floor refinishing, patio and sunroom additions, and is a GAF-certified roofing contractor. And Tri-County Restoration can handle new construction for that home you've always dreamed of. Call Tri-County Restoration, 601-856-2530, or visit our website, tcr.ms. That's tcr.ms.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Today is the anniversary of 9/11. We're taking a little bit of a look at some of the events surrounding 9/11. What we're told, the motto for the day is never forget, right? Problem is, we still don't know what happened on 9/11. More and more people are realizing that the official story is really just bunk. One of the main things that people can look at, if you want to see something that's just weird, and this is one of the things that I think most people, they go, wait a second, what? Did you know there were three buildings knocked down in New York City on 9/11, not just two? Planes flew into two, but a third one collapsed at free fall speed straight down into its own footprint. That's World Trade Center 7, WTC 7. Go take a look at the video of it and tell me if it doesn't look a little weird. Looks like a controlled demolition of a building. But they tell us it was just some office fires caused by the collapse of the first two buildings that set off fires in this building, and it collapsed into its footprint. There have only been three steel-framed skyscrapers that have ever collapsed in the history of modern architecture. They all happened on 9/11 in New York City that day. Now, the NIST, the National Institutes for Standards and Technology, came out, and they told us that it was the office fires. There were no explosions there. It was just some office fires that took this building down, again, at free fall speed. You have to go look at the video of it to understand what I'm saying. Here is the guy in charge of NIST.
And our analysis show that even the smallest explosive charge that was capable of bringing down the critical column in the building, had it occurred, we would have seen sound levels of 120 to 130 decibels about a half a mile away. That would have been an incredibly loud sound, and that sound was not picked up by any of the videos or witnesses that we have talked to.
Okay, so this is a guy telling you, there were no explosions. We would have heard explosions if there were any explosions. There were no explosions. This building just fell by fires. Here's some video and some witness testimony from the day.
Listen, the 4-1 should have taken a couple of companies that they were leaving.
That's the radio. You could probably hear that. It's a giant explosion. Here's a couple of firefighters who were on the phone calling their families to tell them they're okay as 9/11 is progressing. And here's what happens in the background of them. Again, this is the guy from National Institute of Standard Technology that did the official story of why World Trade Center 7 collapsed. He said, there were no explosions. There would be evidence. We would have heard something.
Yeah, here's one of the guys. He can tell you I'm okay, all right? Here, hold on. You want to call your mother or something?
So that's a bunch of firefighters standing around talking on the phone as people are they're being filmed by news media that's down there, and you hear huge explosions going on behind them. But the guy at NIST said never happened. Here's a kind of a compilage of eyewitnesses to the collapse of all of the towers. Again, we've been told there were no explosives. This was planes and jet fuel that brought down these three skyscrapers.
Firefighters and eyewitnesses reported a series of explosions before and during the collapses.
And we heard the noise associated with an implosion. Secondary explosion on Tower 2.
Some sort of explosive device.
We're obviously having a bit of trouble right now maintaining our location because we just heard one more explosion.
There was another major explosion.
Do you know anything about those extra explosions we heard?
No, I do not.
Were they car bombs?
I have no idea, ma'am.
The string shook. And I heard like an explosion.
Do you know if it was an explosion or if it was a building collapse? To me, it sounded like an explosion.
We heard a very loud blast, an explosion.
They were taking photographs and securing this area just prior to that
huge explosion that we all heard and felt. Not clear now is why this explosion took place. When there was some sort of collapse or explosion.
From street level, as though it had exploded up, a giant rolling ball of flame, and the firefighters screamed, run.
It was this blast of warm air. It wasn't hot. It was warm. And it picked me up and threw me up against the wall of the building that was...
You were picked up off the ground.
Physically picked up off the ground.
I remember an explosion. At that point, I got knocked out. I don't remember anything. Then I got up, and I looked out the window because the windows exploded, and the street below caved in. And at that point, there was like fireballs coming up.
An hour later than that, we had that big explosion from much, much lower. I don't know what on earth caused that.
About 15 minutes after they made their entry, we heard a boom. I don't know if that was the infrastructure that was going or another explosion.
Again, there has been a second explosion.
John, just seconds ago, there was a huge explosion, and it appears right now the second World Trade Tower has just collapsed.
All of a sudden, I heard rumbling, and we all started running away from it. The glass, like, blew out and threw me onto the sidewalk, and I couldn't see for, like, 20 seconds.
It was like holy hell coming down them stairs. And then when we finally got to the bottom, they were coming out on a mezzanine level there. And another explosion came right on me, just everyone flying.
We stuck on the stairs for a while. We finally got down to the lobby. Then we get to the lobby, which is a big explosion.
So I was real lucky. I don't know what happened to the people behind me when that blast occurred.
And I was actually on the 78th floor of the second tower and was evacuating the tower and experienced all these explosions and made his way back down.
We presume because of the initial explosion, there may have been secondary explosions as well that were detonated.
So this goes on and on. And this is the guy from the National Institute of Standards Technology comes out and says, there were no explosions. There's no evidence of any explosions. We didn't find any explosive material. And they said, well, why didn't you find any explosive material? Did you look for it? And they said, no, we didn't look for it because there's no evidence of explosions. So they did an investigation of the collapse of these three towers looking for the cause of them. But they didn't look for any explosive material because they said there was no evidence of explosive material. There was no evidence of explosions. Now, one person, fog of war in 9/11, being down there in New York City. But this is dozens, hundreds of people reporting this stuff. Now, as for World Trade Center 7, which was not even hit by a plane, and it suddenly just collapses at free fall speed, meaning there's no resistance to it. You have to go watch the video, WTC7. It's still out there. A lot of this stuff has been censored online now. But go look at it, and you see how it explodes. It'll remind you of something. It'll remind you of when they take down a Las Vegas casino. But boy, is it a conspiracy theory to think that they would have actually imploded that building. Because to implode a building takes a long time to wire it. I mean, it's not something you do in a couple of hours. But here is the building owner, Larry Silverstein, explaining World Trade Center 7 and the collapse of it. This is the owner of the building, and listen to the term he uses.
I remember getting a call from the fire department commander, telling me that they were not sure they were going to be able to contain the fire. And I said, you know, we've had such terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it.
Pull it.
And they made that decision to pull. And then we watched the building collapse.
Larry Silverstein, the owner of the building, says there was so much loss of life and there was fires. They weren't sure they were going to be able to contain. So they decided to pull it. Pull it is a demolition term, meaning go ahead and implode it. Which begs the question, why was World Trade Center 7, prior to 9/11, why would it be wired to be destroyed, to be brought down into its own footprint? You don't just do that to a building. It's not like a safety feature. Not every skyscraper around has got explosive charges run all the way through it. So if they need to, if there's a bad fire, they can just explode the whole thing. Now, this is a deliberate thing. Of course, this is not covered on the news. And when I come back, we're going to get into other things. Particularly, we're going to start with a Trump thing. Trump was circling around some of this stuff during his campaign in 2016. It got me all excited. Since then, I've just been disappointed.
Think back to your childhood. I bet you can recall that one person who was always tattling on you. You took an extra cookie from the jar. They told mom. Didn't brush your teeth before bed. They ratted you out. Well, our own bodies are a lot like those childhood tattletales, consistently giving us reports of our health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
Final segment here as we explore 9/11, not just remember it, but try to explore exactly what happened. I'm not going to have time to get through everything I want to. If you're interested in this topic, you can do your own research. You can email me, MikeMadison@WYAB.com. I'll send you my show notes for today. It'll have some stuff that I'm not going to have time to get to. But I'll go ahead and start with this. In 2016, I voted for Donald Trump, and this is kind of one of the reasons he was speaking a little bit of truth that was not normally spoken out loud.
15 years ago, we didn't have people coming around. I mean, the whole thing. And in all fairness, we went after Iraq. They did not knock down the World Trade Center, okay? It wasn't the Iraqis that knocked down the World Trade Center. We went after Iraq. We decimated the country. Iran's taken over. Okay. But it wasn't the Iraqis. You will find out who really knocked down the World Trade Center because they have papers in there that are very secret. You may find it's the Saudis, okay? But you will find out. But it wasn't Iraq. So you say.
So there's Donald Trump saying, yeah, you may find out it was the Saudis. Now, this is when the missing 28 page, or the classified 28 pages was still classified. But he knew about it. A lot of people knew about it. It was a poorly held secret. But for some reason, our government decided that we couldn't handle this information. So for about 16, 17 years, they classified this report. And I'll tell you what it was. 28 pages refers to a section at the end of the December 2002 report on the Joint Inquiry into Intelligence Community Activities before and after the terrorist attacks of September 11th, conducted by the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence and the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, that contains details of foreign state sponsor support for al-Qaeda prior to the attack and the Saudi connection to the hijackers. The pages explain that some of the September 11th hijackers received assistance and financial support from individuals connected to the Saudi Arabian government, not just some rich Saudis, some radical rich Saudis. No, the Saudi Arabian government, including Saudi intelligence officers, embassy staff, and members of the Saudi royal family. They hid this from us for 16 or 17 years in a classified document until there was enough outrage that said, release it. And they finally released it. And the media didn't touch it, didn't talk about it. Now, as for how different Donald Trump is as an elected leader now, as an outsider, he campaigned saying, hey, Iraq didn't knock these towers down. You may find out the Saudis do that. Well, we found out that the Saudi Arabian government was involved with it. How did Donald Trump respond as president? His very first foreign trip was straight to anyone, Saudi Arabia, where he danced with them and shook hands and went around the big glowing orb and sold them a ton of weapons. And Saudi Arabians and Donald Trump have been BFFs ever since. Meanwhile, we've laid waste to Iraq, to Afghanistan, to Syria, to Libya, to Yemen. And the Saudi Arabians have paid no price for it whatsoever. They're supposedly our allies. Several FBI street-level investigations into the activities of 9/11 terrorists were stymied by higher-ups in the weeks prior to 9/11, each under strange circumstances, and well before the street-level agents felt like they had reached their logical end. There's some of these here. Ken Williams of the Phoenix FBI office sent a now famous July 10th, 2001 memo to the counterterrorism division of the FBI suggesting that the organization institute a national program to keep tabs on suspicious flight school students. This came just a few weeks after the CIA learned that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the mastermind of the 9/11 plot and a well-known terrorist at the time, who the CIA was monitoring, was recruiting jihadists to come to the U.S. to take part in attacks here. Williams, who had previously been transferred to an unrelated arson case, despite tracking the hijackers for more than a year, had been back on the case for about a month when he wrote the memo, which also warned of possible efforts by Osama bin Laden to send students to the U.S. to attend civil aviation universities and colleges. That was ignored. This goes on and on. There's several. What have I got time to get into here? Oh, man, there's so much. FBI agent Robert Wright of a Chicago field office who had been investigating a suspected terrorist cell for 3 years was informed in January 2001 that the case was being closed. This despite Wright's contention that his case was growing stronger. His investigation included individuals from the notorious P-TECH, a software company which provided products for the White House, Congress, FBI, CIA, IRS, Army, Navy, and FAA, which was raided by federal agents December 2002. 3 months before September 11th, Wright wrote a stinging internal memo charging that the FBI was not interested in thwarting a terrorist attack, but rather, quote, was merely gathering intelligence so they would know who to arrest when a terrorist attack occurred. At the very very, very least, they let this thing happen, and it kicked off these wars. Now, who's behind this stuff? We don't know exactly, but we've got some pretty strong indications. This was from thing done called Rebuilding America's Defenses by the Project for a New American Century. Written before the September 11th attacks and during political debates of the war in Iraq, a section of Rebuilding America's Defenses entitled, quote, Creating Tomorrow's Dominant Force, meaning building the American empire and spending trillions of dollars on our military, became the subject of considerable controversy. This is what this document said, quote, They wanted to kick off an empire. They wanted to spend tons of money on defense. They wanted defense contractors fat and happy, but they just couldn't get the American people there. We needed something to happen. This is what they said. Further, the process of transformation, even if it brings revolutionary change, is likely to be a long one, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. And a year later, they got their new Pearl Harbor, didn't they? And this is why I'm also never not still a Republican. The Democrats are just feeding off the weakness of their followers, a corrupt party if there ever was one. But the Republicans are just a different kind of corrupt. The Project for a New American Century that wrote that about wanting a new or needing a new Pearl Harbor was a neoconservative think tank based in Washington, D.C. People that are involved in this thing, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz, Elliot Abrams, who Trump has in his administration right now, William Bennett, you know, the moral authority of America, Bill Bennett, Jeb Bush, Steve Forbes, Frank Gaffney, Dan Quayle, Paul Wolfowitz, Donald Rumsfeld, Donald Kagan, a list of who's who in the Republican Party were all involved in this march to endless wars. I'm supposed to be on board with that party? Anyway, I've got... This stuff goes on and on. Some great movies. There's something called Loose Change, Final Cut. You might want to check that out. I think you can still find it online. You can go to AE911 Truth. That's Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth to explore the building collapses. Go to Pilots for 9/11 Truth. They are a group of pilots that say that what they saw take place when it comes to the airlines was not possible either. This thing stinks to high heaven. Time to investigate it for real. It's a shame Trump didn't do it. See you tomorrow. Bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.